The next topic I wanted to explore, relating to some of the kashrut issues we've talked about in the past. Last week we've talked already about basar v'chalav, milk and meat, but I wanted to talk this week about dishwashers. Specifically, to be clear here, because there are two different questions, or really three questions you could ask about dishwashers, we're not talking about a case of a dishwasher which was used for treif. This isn't a new dishwasher that you Airbnb, hotel, and you know, you're not sure about the provenance before, you know, what was used before. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a case of, it's a kosher dishwasher, let's say it's a brand new dishwasher, and I want to know, I only have space for, you know, one dishwasher in my Manhattan apartment, and I don't have space for two, and I want, ideally, to use my dishwasher for milk and the meat. Can I use a dishwasher for both?
Except that really doesn't have anything to do with halacha. We do not have dishwasher because we have so many pots and pans in the relatively small kitchen that we don't have enough room for all of it. So my son said to my wife when he was like, a boy, why don't we have a dishwasher? He says, we do have one. She says, no, we don't. He says, yes, we do. Your father. And I don't mix milk and meat together.
So Rav Moshe has a really interesting position. We're going to talk about it because I think it's what's really interesting about it is that though the American stock typically does follow Rav Moshe, this is one of those cases where actually Rav Moshe is much more makil than our practice. Makil, yeah. Actually, this is one of those where we tend to be a makil on this, like communally. But we'll talk about it in a few minutes. As I was about to come upstairs and I had prepared this a few weeks ago, I realized one of the challenges of teaching Rav Moshe, which we've talked about in the past, is that Rav Moshe doesn't Moshe, when he assumes you already know a topic and kind of comes in the middle of a topic, kind of giving his, you know, his ha'arot, his, you know, his comments, his footnotes, so to speak, on a topic. He doesn't begin a topic with, like, here's the main sources and let me introduce you to the topic. And, you know, even if you already know the topic, sometimes it's helpful. Moshe doesn't do any of that. And I think part of that relates to this question that we've talked about before, where Moshe intentionally doesn't translate his sources because he doesn't want the translation because he doesn't want it to be publicized for everyone. It's really only meant for people already learning the sugya already. Which means then, as someone who's teaching Rav Moshe, that it sometimes is a little bit more difficult because you need some background that's not present. So I realized as I came up that, first of all, I'm just going to read the background outside, but it just, there's just so much background that it makes more sense to just look at the Shulchan Aruch first. So the Shulchan Aruch, I quoted, this is the sheet we have, the single sheet from Sefaria. This is Siman Sadiheh in Yerodea. Siman Sadiheh in Yerodea is the siman about what's called the Nat Barnat. Nat Barnat, Notin Tam Bar Notin Tam, is a principle in halacha that states as follows. We know that it's forbidden to eat milk and meat. Right? The pasuk says, Lo tvashel gidi b'chalei vimo, you're not allowed to eat the milk of a calf with the milk of his mother, and means we can't eat it, we can't cook it, we can't benefit from it. Now, there are a lot of halachot that come with that, and one of those relate to like the juices or the bliot, what's called the bliot, the leftover kind of taste that comes with
the bliot usually means swallowing. Is that related to that?
It doesn't mean swallowing, but it does. Yeah. Is there any more of these? No. Okay.
I didn't need this one because I saved last week's.
No, this one. I don't have. I thought I made a bunch of copies of this. Sorry. Okay. All right. Either way,
Robinson once said he took a frying pan or a pot or something and put it with nothing in it, yeah, and put it on the stove and turned the fire on. The grills actually did come out.
Interesting. So either way, gliot means like the food that's kind of like absorbed into the kli, absorbed into the utensil. Now the truth is, scientifically, most stainless steel things don't really have this. That's just the way stainless steel is, which is a big debate nowadays. Stainless steel is more makel. It's a whole big debate in postgame. It is true, though, in the past, that like you talk about like an earthenware vessel, the more you cook it, it is true. Like the past tastes kind of do get absorbed. This is, you know, true. This is why like sherry cask wine, for instance, like that's because the point is that the cask absorbs the sherry, you know, wine. So it's, you know, there's all sorts of materials that do absorb previous tastes. So there's a concern about if something has a previous taste, or we can turn with milk and meat. The question of not burnout is the following. Let's say I have a fleishig pot, right? I used this fleishig pot just 5 minutes ago to, boil hot dogs or something. It's whatever it is. I make chicken soup with chicken inside, right? Boiled chicken. And 5 minutes later, I'm going to use, an hour later, I want to use the same pot to make pasta. So now the question is...
Pasta and cheese?
Let's say pasta first. So is the pasta fleishig or is the pasta part? Can I eat the pasta with cheese? Can I put cheese in the pasta pot, while it's being cooked, right? Can I make pasta with cheese? Because it's been cleaned, right? But I still use this pot recently in the last 2 hours.
Well, my understanding is that if you're Ashkenazi, it's fleishig, and if you're Sephardi, it's part.
So it is where
the... Are they adding the cheese?
No. Added the cheese, it's milk. I made pasta to fleishig pot, took it out, it's stamp pasta. If you're an Ashkenazi, my understanding is it's fleishig, so if you're Sephardi, you can...
You left that kale, the fleishig kale, but not fleishig.
So this is part of the debate. This concept is called not bar not, no tain tam bar no tain tam, meaning the way we envision it is that let's say you made your chicken soup with chicken, and chicken tastes are absorbed into the pot. That's no tain tam, that's one layer. And then, in theory, the question, are we concerned about the bliot, the absorbed taste in the pot, now leaving the pot and going into the pasta? Right, so that's the no tain tam. So that's the debate. We passing that no tain tam bar no tain tam is fine,
bar,
most cases.
That race?
No tain tam bar no tain tam.
Okay.
Not bar not, it's nun tet. That's just like the abbreviation. So we tend to passing that it's fine, there is a debate between Ashkenazim and Sephardim that you reference to. So if you take a look, for instance, at the Shulchan Aruch, this is Simon Sadi Hay, where he talks about this. He says as follows, look at Simon Bet, Sif Bet, the second Sif. He says as follows, Beit Zosh Nifasha No, look at the first one, because then the Ramah quoting thing. Look at the beginning. Dagim Shnifashlu Nitzlu B'Kedera Shel Basar Rehusa Yasesh Ein Shuman Davukba. If you bake, this is he's talking about, if you cook fish, right, so it's the same thing as pasta, something carved. If you cook fish in a pot, which is a fleishig pot, which is well cleaned, right? We're talking about a clean pot, not a pot that has, residue left over. It's a clean pot. And so the Shulchan Aruch says, having no tain tam bar no tain tam, de hetera, it is mutter. We don't have to treat the pot as, we don't have to treat the pasta as fleishig. And at least for Sephardim, you could even then later on eat this pasta with cheese. It would be no problem. Ashkenazim, though, if you take a look at the Ramah on the Sifbet, the Ramah in the smaller letters, after Sif Bet, he says, "V'yesh machlirim b'tzliya u'bishul le'sor noten bar noten tam." There are those who are machmir that if you cook or fry noten tam bar noten tam, meaning, like I say, you make pasta with this, you make pasta in this pot, or you fry something using this pot, then we are machmir v'aminag le'sor lechatchila u'bidi'evet mutar b'chol inyan. The minag is that we are machmir. So this is one of those cases where Ashkenazim or Machmir, which is what the whole concept of dairy or fleishig equipment is, right? The concern about dairy or fleishig equipment is that I'm not allowed to use the utensil which was recently used for, let's say, the other gender, as people call it, of food, because the food is considered to be in some ways, that gender, even if it's not in contact with it. There's no, the chicken soup is not in any ways in contact with the pasta, but because the same pot is being used in the same day, even though it's clean, we're concerned about it for Ashkenazim, and there'd be a problem. Now, all of this is like the basic concept of not bar-not. And it's not bar-not, it's actually one of the most important halachic concepts, because this is like half of all kitchen shilas related to not bar-not. That's kind of the basic idea of not bar-not. Any questions about the basic? Yeah.
How do you even measure 160th?
Oh, that's a big question. It's a whole debate in some kufchet, how you debate it. Yeah.
I would imagine, usually speaking, that generally, the bliot wouldn't be it would be puzzle to shish you because there's so much more whatever you're making with the bleos.
It's
not that much.
It depends on the case, because the bleo might consider the bleo to be the whole pot. So depending on the case, if you made chicken soup, for instance, the way that halacha paskins is that we would consider the bleo to be the extent of the entire pot, like rim.
Right.
So the volume inside a pot, so the volume inside a pot is usually a lot less than the circumference, so to speak.
This noodle tastes chickeny. I don't care how much it has a chicken flavor in it.
Yeah, I mean, the truth is, I haven't tried too much.
I personally have never had
pasta where, like, I can taste the chicken of the previous cooking. It's never happened to me, but this is what halacha is concerned with.
We can apply some of the same thought process here to non-kosher food, so if non-kosher food was cooked in the pot.
So the problem with non-kosher food is that we typically pasta, even for Sephardim, that there's no heter, no tam bar, no tam, meaning that even like five layers later, it's still problematic. Meaning, let's say, even if you make, give me an example. Let's say, for instance, a non-Jew or Jew, whatever, someone makes, chicken soup using trace chicken, right, not kosher chicken, in a pot. And then the pot gets cleaned. And then you make pasta in that pot. And then you take the pasta and you move the pasta from that pot, let's say, to a frying pan. And you then fry the pasta with tomato sauce, nothing fleshic yet. And then you take this frying pan and you make fish. And you take the fish and you make, something else. Every one of those things are all trace. That's the way we paskin that. It's like it doesn't ever get weaker. It's like it goes infinitely.
Which is
why it's more complicated when it talks about, like, dishwashers, which is talking about.
Put it on a china plate after that as a trace of the plate.
Yeah, you'd have to actually throw out the plate.
Throw for a grand slam.
Yeah.
One hatch of waiting a year kind of thing.
The plates are more complicated. Yeah, there might be some hetterim for earthenware, but it's complicated. Yeah, it's not so great.
So I recall this year with Rabbi Einhorn that we discussed pipua, that let's say chicken soup touches the outside of a dairy pot, and he claimed that it penetrates, and I asked the chemist, and he said it's not true, that chicken soup can't get through. So Rabbi Einhorn responded, halacha is not driven by reality, halacha drives reality.
Yeah, I mean, there is like a whole simon that Shulchan Aruch talks about. I think it is true that scientifically, if you have a pot that's made of a material which is absorbent, let's say you have like a, even plastic, I think it is true that plastic from the outside does absorb into the inside. It's true that most people's pots nowadays, if you're using a metal pot of some sort, they're usually designed such a way, stainless steel, even, Teflon, like they're not really absorbent in that same way. That's a whole separate discussion. There are folks who talk about maybe nowadays we're more Miko, or Milan is a whole thing about it.
We could do it anyway already if we're using
So there's a whole discussion about whether stainless steel pots maybe will be more Miko, but it's a kind of a side topic. But yeah, you're right that the science here is a little... hard to always jive with the the realities, so this is kind of the background of notin tam by notin tam. Here's where the case becomes relevant for us. The Shulchan Aruch quotes, did I not quote this case? In Siv Gimel. Yeah, Siv Gimel, this is where it becomes relevant.
Where are we?
This is on the back page of this one. Yeah, I think the English starts on the bottom of the first half of the page. This is the case. The concern is as follows. Back then, how did we wash dishes, right, at the time? So hopefully, hot water certainly cleans dishes better. So what might you do? You might put a big pot of boiling hot water. Right, that's the easiest way to do it. You have water, you boil the water, and you put it down, and then you put your dishes inside the boiling water, and you rub it or whatever it is, and that's how you clean the pot. Now, what would you might think? Maybe I'll wash all of my dishes together. So can I wash my fleshic dishes and my milchic dishes at the same time in the same big boiling pot of water?
Were you able to put earthenware vessels into boiling water and it then...
It could be like metal of some sort or, it doesn't have to be earthenware specifically.
I would think the answer to your question is no.
I mean, they have like bronze and copper. Yeah.
You said, could you wash all your milk and plate dishes together in the same pot? And I said, and I'm answering, I don't think so.
So it's actually not so simple. That this is one of those cases where actually Spartan would actually be more makel. Of course.
It could be more makel on the kosher dishes.
Sometimes.
They even need egg monsters on the paste.
Sometimes, but I think we've pointed out over the years there are some things that there are much more machmir about, it's worth being aware of. Like Bishul Akum is much worse. For Sephardim, or much harder, yeah.
But when Rabbi Robinson does Haggadah before Pesach, he doesn't say separate the Pleshik and Melechik pots.
It's because for Pesach we kind of treat everything as if it's a treif for the sake of Pesach. So it's like we're doing it anew.
So you could switch?
There's actually a debate. There's debate about, in general, can you switch your pots or not? In theory, the answer is yes. There's really no reason you can't switch. If you do the right process, you do it to Haggadah, if it's relevant, you know, you put in boiling water, if it's a use in water, you could always switch. In practice, the minhag is not to just do it, you know, all the time because it'd be confusing.
Yeah.
But the Magen Avraham already quotes that there is a minhag that if you want to switch on Pesach or before Pesach, this is when you switch.
Even if it's a plastic candle?
It depends on the particular utensil if you can switch it. Depends on the case. We have to have a specific utensil.
That's a different question. Can you kosher something with a plastic candle rather than do what? It?
What? Okay.
Make
I was told
it
about one pot that I brought in. I had to have tested.
You got to
have. Yeah, it depends on the particular. What exact pot? I can talk about specifics of the pot. That's like a whole different discussion. But in theory, in terms of can something be changed its gender, I guess that's what we call it. Then the answer is. Yes, in theory, can.
But also, the big difference with that situation is the pots and utensils you're bringing are clean. This is these things I would assume have like actual meat and.
Yeah, that's what's interesting about this. So, in a case, so this is what the Shulchan Aruch says. The Shulchan Aruch says if we're not concerned that there is any real food substance left on the plate. So let's say, for instance, the way that you can imagine this. Maybe the way that we're talking about here is not plates that, you know, still have like a little bit of residue of the chicken or whatever. You scraped it all off. But now, like, you still want to get rid of, you know, it's still a bit dirty. So you want to clean it, you know, in boiling water now. So we're talking about a case where there's no actual food substance. So the Shulchan Aruch says, if you put, you know, fleshik pot that has, you know, some residue on it, but nothing substantive, and you have a milchik pot, you can wash them in the same, big pot of water, no problem. They're not in contact with each other, and there was no concern.
If they have to wait 24 hours before we do any of this.
Yeah, 24 hours would solve a lot of the issues.
But why do you say they're not in contact with each other?
Well, it's assuming they're not, like, right on top of each other. I mean, I don't think there's enough room for them to be on one side and the other side.
Uh-huh.
That's kind of that's the assumption of this case. It's, like, a big enough, you know... big enough big pot. But Ashkenazim, though, are machmir. Ashkenazim are concerned, the Ramah quotes based on Tosfot and the Ran, that we are concerned, even in this case, why? Even though the fleshik pot is not in contact with the milchik pot, but what we're concerned with is just in terms of the thinking about the situation, you have meat which was put into the pot. And now the pot's in boiling water, and so we're worried that the meat taste is going to leave the pot into the water. And now we have, at the same time, we have a milchik pot. We have a milk that was into the pot, which is now in the milchik pot, and now it's going to leave the milchik pot into the water. And we're concerned about the water at the same time having the meat and milk taste in the water.
So
that's the concern.
Case.
Yes. So that's the case we're talking about. And in that case, the Ramah says we're not allowed to wash them at the same time. What can you do, though, is you're allowed to wash them one after another, even in the same water. Even in the same water that you use to wash your fleshik dishes, you can now reuse that boiling water, assuming there's no substantive food, you can now reuse it for milchik dishes.
That seems to be contradictory, because if they're both in there at the same time, but not touching, and they consider milchik dishes, but you can do one and then the other, they're not touching and there's still brios, so you think the water would still have the same issue.
So the concern here is that because it's one of the tricky cases here. It's like you have to really think about like what's happening. In theory, all of basar b'chalav is what's called not the hetera, meaning if the water has, let's say, I just wash my fleishig dishes. So the water is fleishig, but halachically there's no significance to being fleishig. It's not us, there's no prohibition of being fleishig. So we're going to treat it a little bit differently than if it was treif. Right? If it was treif, that'd be very problematic. But the water is fleishig. So if you happen to have water that has like some fleishig and then later on has some milchig, we're not really worried about that. What we are worried about for the Ramah is that maybe at the exact same time, the milchik and the fleishik will come together, or really what he's really concerned about also is maybe the pots might actually come in contact with each other. Maybe like the, you know, in this, maybe the pots will touch each other, and they won't go through the water, instead they'll go directly one pot to the other.
Was
that's kind
of
what...
Would you do all of this stuff, or
could
do it, maybe could wait and not do it today?
I think Bidi Eved, in terms of cleaning the pots, I think he says you can.
Stuff. I wouldn't do it. I mean, I have to say all
I think the evidence wants that you can do it, yeah. And for the pot here, yeah. I think you could.
So wait a day. You don't have to
I'm not an expert on the history of faucets, but I doubt they had faucets at the time. They probably had to carry water. And it reminds me of the story of the Chofetz Chaim, that somebody asked why he didn't wash his hands three times. And he said he had rachmanos on the maid who schlepped the water. So maybe that is the reason for the Ramah's kula.
I mean, potentially. I don't think that's... it's an interesting question about being concerned about the water, but yeah, it's an interesting question about like the realities. Maybe nowadays we're more machmir on this water question.
That's the science story.
Yeah.
You like
the No, I like the fact that you could only find them from the time.
No, there is like some discussion, not right here. There are discussions about water. We're concerned about the tirch of water, but it's an interesting point about, you know, the concern about how annoying it is. Mm-hmm. But certainly for Ashkenaz, we're not allowed to wash at the same time. Now, all of that is kind of background information. I know it's a bit complicated, but that's kind of like the background. I'll repeat it when it comes to here. But so now the question we're talking about now is you move forward from the Shulchan Aruch like 300 years, and we, Rav Moshe and some of the poskim in the 1950s, are asked the question about dishwashers. Again, we're talking about a case of a dishwasher, not a treif dishwasher. There's no non-kosher food. We're talking about, let's say, the dishwasher was kleishik, and now I want to use it to wash my milchik dishes. So Rav Moshe says as follows. He has a number of tshuva. We're not going to read all of them. I copied all of them, I think, but you don't have to read. We're not going to read all of them because they're a little repetitive. But Rav Moshe, if you want to take a look, it's interesting. On the second page of the, this is the second handout here. Rav Moshe says, you take a look, for instance, on Chelek Aleph Siman Kuf Daled, this is the first source on dishwashers. He wrote this tshuva in 1957, and this is kind of an addendum to a previous tshuva. We've actually read this tshuva, I think, in a different context about bat mitzvahs. I think last year we talked about this. But at the very end of the tshuva, I guess he added, like, as an addendum, the following, you know, side point, which is a really big side point, but he says, with regard to this newfound utensil, which is used to wash dishes, shenikra b'shem dishwasher, which is called a dishwasher, can use it to wash milchik dishes and fleshy dishes one after another, not in the same cycle, but one cycle after another. So we're going to talk about this exact parameter, but Moshe thinks you need to have different racks. You can't share the same racks. You have to have your own racks for milchik, your own racks for fleishik. We're going to talk about the racks in 20 minutes or so. We're going to come back to the racks. But besides the racks, if you do switch out the racks, right, the place where you hold the dishes themselves, then, in theory, he says, the actual dishwasher, like the frame, the water, the soap, the dispenser, like the actual dishwasher, not the rack, anything else, there's no problem. You're allowed to do it. Why? He doesn't even explain. He just said this mutter.
How about the size of the machine?
Doesn't make a difference. Doesn't make a difference.
Doesn't matter if the inside of the dishwasher is metal or...
Makes no comment for emotion on this, yeah. Okay. No mention about this.
As long as you switch the racks, it's fine.
For emotion, yeah.
For emotion.
He doesn't even explain why. And actually, take a look at the next chuba. This is really fun. It's like an interesting side fact to know. Look at the next chuba. This is somebody asks him a question. This guy, this is a short chuba, where this guy, I guess, Rav Shul Zacharish, wrote him in 1964 about this question about the dishwasher, right? Your Moshe adds like an addendum, like as if this is even like an important question. Although, you know, for obviously, you know, this becomes a very important topic of can you use dishwasher one after another. So Rav Moshe is actually challenged about it, and he says as follows in the future tshuva in 1964, like 7 years later, Hinei kvar katavti, I already wrote in a previous tshuva, Shemash betocha dishwasher tshuvamash menichim akelim tzarich yushnaim, echel aki basar vechel ekli chalav, I wrote before that the racks have to be switched out, but etzem dishwasher matim betocha davar shmenichim alav akelim, shirak defanot shmizutam v'egay, all that shnei betachaseh, all of those things that you can use the same dishwasher, the actual structure of the dishwasher can be used. Lo katavti shamatam, in that tshuva, I didn't write a reason, an explanation, a rationale for it. Why? Mishum dehu pashut. Because it's obvious. Because it's clear, everyone knows. Deha be'etzem hu nat barnat shimutam basa l'chala v'ipcha. Because it's not barnat. Now, just to be clear, this is a big debate. Not everyone thinks it's so simple. Right. I mean, this is why, or one of the reasons why, the common custom we'll talk about is not always Paschim like Moshe. It's not very common to you, most, especially Ashkenazim, especially in America, it's very rare for people to, I'm not saying there are no Paschim or nobody who does it, but it's rare for most, let's say, from Jews who follow Rav Moshe consistently on every issue to use the same dishwasher for milk and then meat. It's just not very common. Even though Rav Moshe Paschim, in theory, would be allowed to do so. But, so Rav Moshe's argument, despite his argument, it's not really held. So,
and he's not even saying you have to run a cycle with no dishes in it in between either.
No, he's saying you can have, literally, you know, I have, let's say, Shavuos, I had one meal of fleishik dish, of milchik, and then I had another meal of milchik, milchik and fleishik, okay, and then Motzei Shabbos, I want to run my dishwasher, so I put in the milchik meals. I first, you know, I put in the milchik food. I run the cycle. I take out the dishes. I put in the fleishik dishes. Oh, sorry. I take out the racks. Put in new racks or different racks. Put in the fleishik dishes. All good.
Is there any consideration in
now racks do cost like $200, $300 to replace?
Really?
Depends on the machine.
Like racks are not so cheap.
Yeah, but if you're
going to
have it.
If it means that you don't need the second dishwasher, all you need is a second set of racks. This is actually a big, very big hula because it means $200 you have another dishwasher effectively.
It comes up. People move into a co-op, and there's an old dishwasher.
Yeah.
There's a dishwasher from previous owner. So let it stay a couple days. Take out the old racks, throw them away, run the
right, so that's the question of the cycle, that's the question of the non-kosher.
Racks,
yeah. That's the question of the non-kosher question.
And
yeah.
It's not every day I'm going to wash both. Once to move in, that's
yeah. So that's the question of the non-kosher in terms of moving into a new apartment. Here I'm not even talking about just milk and meat.
And we're not washing the racks. They're
gone. Yeah. So I'm hearing you talking about milk and meat. So most of that, as long as you buy different racks, then you're fine. And he thinks it's so obvious. So what's Ramoshi's argument? Why do you think it's so obvious?
It's just like the pot situation, which is red.
Yes, exactly like the pot thing. That's exactly his argument. Because yep. Ramoshi's thought, this is his explanation. This is he explains this later on, and I think he's partially explained it in 64, but he comes back to it again in 1972. He has like 7 or 8 tshuvas about this, because, you know, I think for him it was so obvious, but like for everyone else it wasn't so obvious. Mm-hmm. So he keeps needing to defend his theory over and over and over again.
He didn't want to wash dishes at home.
I also think there's probably the concern that people don't properly scrape off their dishes before putting it into the dishwasher.
So that might be, we'll talk about the different concerns, but you're right that it's not always clear that there's no food substance on food, most dishes do have some food substance on them.
Right. And
yeah. So either way, this is what he says. Hinei inyan dishwasher. Let's look at the next tshuva. This is one from 1971. It's as follows. Hinei inyan dishwasher katavti hanir leledina below atam. I wrote regarding the dishwashers without explanation. Ve'atam pashut. Again, it's an obvious reason why. Ve'ha basar v'chalav shem dvarim ha'mutarim kol echad lifnei atzmo. Because when it comes to milk and meat on their own, are mutter, right? There's nothing wrong or there's nothing usser about milk. There's nothing usser about meat independently of each other. Barak aide bishul nesru. And they're only prohibited when they are cooked together. Lo nesru ala kederach bishul shu'u tam mamash. Velo benotin tam barnotin tam du tam akalishta. And when it comes to prohibiting milk and meat when they're cooked together, it's only if you actually have real milk and real meat cooked together. If you only have the leftovers, like the blios being cooked together, that's not really cooking milk and meat. Right? That's not really the same problem. And therefore, he says, quotes based on the Gemara, we talked about this in the Shulchan Aruch. And therefore, the Shulchan Aruch paskins that even if you cook, you bake fish or something in a pot, a milking pot, that there's no leftover residue, so then you would, in theory, at least b'di'eved, you would be allowed to use that fish with dairy, right?
Klishta
means like weaker. It's like a weaker taste. Like kalush.
My mother used to have separate pots for fish and meat.
So fish is a separate discussion. It's really interesting because fish is that separate concern about... No, even for Ashkenazim. Because the fish is a separate concern about the... Fish is a specific concern of fish and meat because the Gemara talks about the sakana, the danger of eating fish and meat together. So based on that, the minhag developed to... At least, you don't need to have separate kalim, but there is a minhag among especially, from Eastern Europe, to have separate utensils for meat and separate utensils for fish.
Unless you had just eaten fish on the plate, do you need to swap the plate or swap the fork to eat it?
So this is a whole debate about nowadays. This is a whole debate nowadays. So as far as actually are more machmir, they even think in theory, this is like a side fact, totally not relevant to what we're talking about here, but the Shulchan Aruch actually does mention the same concern. In Or HaChaim, he only mentions, right, in the section about daily life, he only mentions the concern of meat and fish. But all of a sudden in Yoredeya, right, he talks about, I think in Simon Sadi Bet or something, he talks about, he also references
fish
and dairy.
They don't have bagels.
And it's not clear what he means, fish and dairy. So the Ramah says, I don't understand. He actually has this very funny language. He says, it seems to me that the Shulchan Aruch, Beit Yosef mixed up his milk and meat. He mixed the two together. He mixed them up. He swapped the terms. So for Ashkenazim, we're very unclear why there should be any problem with fish and cheese, for milk. But for Sephardim, there's some debate about which exactly Sephardim you are. But if you pass it like a Shulchan Aruch, then in theory you cannot eat fish with dairy.
It's a typo, but they don't have
to. There was the restaurant, I don't know if it's still there, one of the, on 70th or 71st, owned by Sephardim, it was dairy. They wouldn't do fish because they were Sephardim, but then they added fish, I think, because it was costing them business. Yeah. People don't just want dairy.
And I went to such a restaurant in Antwerp. They made believe that it was dairy, but it actually didn't have butter with the fish.
Mm-hmm. So I guess some people, Sephardim are certainly mocking for this. Ashkenazim were not, and in terms of what do you do with actual fish and meat, there are different customs. Some people switch out their plate, some people switch out utensils, some people just don't eat at the same time, some people aren't concerned at all about it because we don't really understand what the kind of is. Yeah, there are different minhagim we can talk about if anyone wants to, their specific family custom. But, anyway, that's like a side point about fish and meat at the same time. So Ramosha is talking about when it comes to, let's go back to our topic, when it comes to cooking, there's actually no concern. It's very weak taste. And so having the bleos, like the absorbed taste of milk and absorbed taste of meat, there's not really a concern of that meat cooked together. That's not really cooking. It's not really, milk and meat. And therefore, the only real problem and therefore, Moshe is assuming the following. If you wash dishes in a fleshik, right, you have the fleshik dishes in your dishwasher. Now, Moshe is going to assume the following, which is not necessarily true nowadays, but for our purposes, we can just, I'm going to kind of skip this assumption. Let's assume, for argument's sake, that the dishwasher is a kli rishon, meaning the dishwasher is considered to be like a pot on the fire, because the dishwasher is, nowadays, these are, most dishwashers work that way, there usually is a heating element, even in American dishwashers,
right,
at the bottom of the dishwasher, you can probably usually see it, and it heats up the water, so much so that it's like right there in the dishwasher. So the dishwasher is what's called the kli rishon, it's almost like equivalent to being on the fire.
Yeah, I would
hold
that way if I
were to put it. Yeah, so in reality, that Moshe deals with, this is like a side point, where Moshe has the dishwashers back then, the water wasn't actually heated in the dishwasher. It usually came from like a boiler. So in theory, that means it's a klisheni, which is more makel even. So that's, which nowadays might not apply. Some people say Ramosha's kula might not apply nowadays. It's a side issue we might talk about a little bit later.
Is that same piece the drying factor also? You know, if you want to dry the dishes, you know, electrically, or is that coming from someplace else?
No, drying is mostly, as far as I know, drying is just like hot air. I don't think it'd be an issue with drying.
No, just I assumed that it was coming from those coils on the bottom.
Yeah, it is from those coils, but it wouldn't be.
Well,
yeah, but
it's hot water.
Yeah, it wouldn't be. But it's an interesting question whether you're concerned like they are, but like assuming the dishes. If you think you can wash the dishes one after another for the water, you definitely can wash it with the air. The hot air drying would not be a problem. That's for sure. They would be even less problematic. But there is like, it's an interesting question. So Rav Moshe says, therefore, if I put my dishes, put my shleishik dish in my dishwasher, so assuming the dishwasher is a kli rishon, right? So imagine instead of a dishwasher, you have a big boiling pot of water, right, that's on a fire, and I put my shleishik dish in the boiling pot. That's effectively the case that Rav Moshe talks about. So what's the rule? So we saw that if there is no shuman ba'in, if there's no residue on the plate, let's say the plate, you know, it's dirty, but it doesn't have, you know, leftover, like, actual meat on it, but it has some residue. Oh, shehaya shishim neged hashuman hadavu. Or, alternatively, even if you do have residue, but you have 60 times the amount of water being used as the residue in the kli. Now, in Rav Moshe's time, this was very much true, that when it comes to dishwashers were not particularly efficient, and they used a ton of water. And so the amount of water, it's just, you can imagine, you know, how much water can fill into a dishwasher. It's a big space. Compare that to the amount of food stuff that's left over. And just to be clear, we're talking about food stuff that we're concerned here when it comes to food stuff. We're talking about, like, actual milk and meat, not like the pasta that has, you know, a little meat. We're talking about the actual milk or meat that's on the plate, like actual, you know, cheese, actual meat.
So we're talking about little
pieces, right? There isn't that much, because most people clear at least a little bit, because otherwise, like, it, you know, it doesn't clean so well.
Might as well wash it.
Right, otherwise it doesn't clean so well. So it's, you usually don't have that much left, so times the amount of water in the dishwasher, that's going to be 60 times, yeah. You're not going to be concerned about it. That's your motion argument. So if we have either, there's no residue, no actual food substance, or you have 60 times the amount of water in the pot than that of the residue that exists, then in that case, then the halacha follows, the halacha we read earlier in the Shulchan Aruch, that af otanamayim, leka isur miladiach sham af otanamayim, achar shiyasir misham kli basar, dehare ein sham tama basar miatmo, ela blia shem kli basar sheze ein oser. So then based on even the Ramah, even the, you know, Ashkenazim who are machmir, we saw that you're allowed to, when it comes to washing your dishes in boiling water, right, in the same big pot, we saw that the Ramah says, as long as you do it not at the same time, it is mutter. So Ramah says this is the exact same case. Effectively, I am putting my shleishik dishes first in this big pot of water, washing it, taking out the shleishik dishes, putting in the milchik dishes, and it's fine. And not only that, but Ramah is going to point out that in most cases, right, this would be fine even if you use the same water. But a dishwasher never uses, I mean, even back then, I don't think you used the same water. It was always, you know, different water. So Moshe can say, in theory, maybe you should even use the same water, or typically machmir, just because, you know, you might as well be machmir, and that's just the way dishwashers work. But in theory, there really is no problem. Right, that's kind of Moshe's argument when it comes to dishwashers. So, he summarizes it at some point. So he quotes this on the Ryan, he quotes this a little bit further inside. I'm not going to read through all the different sources he quotes. And, yeah. Okay, so this is kind of where Moshe's Kiddush is. So forgetting the racks, I'm not talking about the racks yet. Moshe's actually argument is the following. When it comes to the dishes, so imagine I have my plastic dish that's on a rack that have, let's say, assuming case one, the dish is fairly clean, there's no actual residue. Maybe you have like marinara sauce, but there's no actual meat, you know, on the residue. And I want it cleaned. So now I put it in my dishwasher. So forgetting the racks, hot water comes, and the water, you know, cleans off the residue. And where does the hot water bring the residue? To the walls of the dishwasher. So, in theory, based on the principle of not bar not, the dishwasher walls are now considered to be fleshik, right? The same way as the fish case, right? It's the same type of thing. You have fleshik utensils go into the water, which then go into the, you know, the wall of the dishwasher. Now, we saw in the Ramah says, as long as it's not at the same time, that's not a big deal, which is fine. Then if you later on want to then have a new cycle after that with dairy, and you take, assuming there's no residue, you then take the dairy dish, and you wash it with, you know, hot water, and then the dairy, you know, absorption goes from the plate into the water, and then from the water into the walls of the dishwasher. Well, the fact that the walls of the dishwasher previously had some fleshik absorption and now have some milkshake absorption, that's not going to be an issue, because once it's not bar not, once it's going through several stages, it's going from the dish to the water to the dishwasher, it's not going to be a problem. That's Ramosha's argument. And it fits pretty well based on the Ramah. That seems to actually be pretty well within the Ramah. Now, there's a few concerns you might have with Ramosha's argument. First off, Ramosha believes that this is going to be true, assuming that there's no direct contact between the dish and the wall or the concern. Like, that's Ramosha's entire concern, which is why Ramosha believes you need to have different racks. Why you need to have different racks for milk and meat? Because what we're concerned with is that even if there's no food substance, that maybe the dish, not maybe, the dish literally is in direct contact between the dish and the rack, and so now the rack directly becomes fleshik. And now when I later on put my milkshik dish on that rack and it's heated up with hot water, now the milkshik dish absorbs from the rack directly into the dish, and now this dish becomes treif because it has absorptions of milk and meat.
Is there a difference if the racks are rubber or metal?
So Ramosha, no, not for this. Ramosha's concerned that there might be food substance. This is Ramosha's concern. Ramosha's concern is that...
Oh, not even absorbing it, just stuck on it.
Ramosha's concern is that because the racks might have, like, certain foods, like, you're not really noticing, there's some type of, like, residue, like, maybe the racks aren't so clean, you might not notice. We're concerned that there might be something you don't notice.
All right, but if you ran a cycle through without anything...
Or the motion or even then might be something left over.
Okay.
That's your motion's concern.
Okay.
I happen to agree that it's a funny shock, because I think the fact that he's mako already on the first dishwasher, that's the real question. For most people, once you're mako on that, especially nowadays, like, I don't know, I mean, if my dishwasher is clean, my racks people get clean too. Like, it's rarely.
He's probably afraid of being too mako.
Sometimes, yeah, I mean, sometimes, like, I think sometimes if you have the, I don't know, maybe like the utensils, like the silverware, sometimes those, like that plastic container, are small enough that some food residue can be stuck there. But like definitely like the main racks, I don't know. I've never really seen food left over on racks. I've seen it left over on my plates, but I've never seen it left over on my actual racks.
I think he has a concern. Racks are replaceable, so you buy them for whatever, $150, $200. Buying a new dishwasher is a major investment, so replace the racks.
Yes, maybe that's what motivates your motion. He doesn't mention that as a concern. He mentions the concern of like whether the food is actually left over. But you are right that there might be something motivating your motion, you know, behind his argument. But Ramosha's argument, therefore, is because it's not in direct contact with each other, it's fine. Now, that's case one, assuming the dish is clean. Now, most people, the dishes are, well, not so clean. I mean, even if you scrape off the dish, there still is something left over. Otherwise, why are you putting it in the dishwasher? For most people, like, that's the whole point, is because, you know, you want to make it a little bit easier. Like, that's the whole point. So there probably is some fleishik residue on the dish. So Rav Moshe says, if there's actual residue on the dish, right, even the Shulchan Aruch, the Sephardi posik, is machmir if there's actual residue in the dish in terms of washing in the big pot, right, even the Shulchan Aruch pot is machmir in that case. So Rav Moshe says, how can we make it? We can be mako because here we have 60 times the amount of water that we have in the dish, in the dishwasher, as the amount of residue in the dish. Now,
it has the whole dishwasher full of dishes.
In a full washer full of dishes, we have so much water involved that there's 60 times the amount of water. Now, what's complicated about this is that while this might have been true in Rav Moshe's time, he's writing this true about 1950, 1960, 1970s, nowadays, dishwashers don't use very much water. If you know how much, if you ever, you know, open a dishwasher mid-cycle, or open it up, right, there's very little water that comes out. If I open, you know, I mean, like, it's usually locked, but if I tried opening, you know, my my washing machine, right, I would, like, a lot of water might come out, in theory, depending on how old the washing machine is. But a dishwasher, like, very little comes out. In fact, if you look at your dishwasher, there's usually, like, a small receptacle on the bottom, like a small little, like, indent. Where the water, I think it's near where the coils are, and that's the entirety of the water. It's about as much water as this in this pitcher.
Wow.
That's about how much water most dishwashers use now. It makes a little bit more.
It's
not gotta be both. So it's not that much, and, you know, that's based on the modern science. We're able to use the same water over and over again and, you know, reheat it and clean it, and that's kind of the efficiency of modern dishwashers, less electricity and less water, are able to wash dishes better. And so while it's great for the environment, great for the, you know, it's not so great for the kosher industry because now we have a problem because Rav Moshe's psak is not so clearly relevant the same way because we don't use so little water. We don't have 60 times the amount of water. It just doesn't happen. So this is one of the concerns people have nowadays with using Rav Moshe's psak because we don't have, you know, 60 times, and therefore, even for the Shulchan Aruch, we might be concerned about it. Now, there might be, though, a response to this. Besides the water concern, might be another possibility of how we can be mako here, even if there's foodstuff. How can we mako? Because what do you put in your dishwasher in addition to the soap and the dishes? Sorry, in addition to the water and the dishes, you have soap. You have detergent. And if you take a look at the third page here, the Shulchan Aruch quotes the following rule when it comes to not bar nat. Shernot says as follows, Yir Ali, right, this is his position of the Shulchan Aruch, which is really itself interesting. The Shulchan Aruch says, my own position, She'im natnu afar b'mayim chamim, if you put dirt, or like dust, ashes, in hot water, sh'b'yorei kodesh sh'niucha k'derot sh'betocha, afal pi sh'shemen devuk ben mutar d'al yidei ha'afar hu'nokin tam yisham. If before you put in the dishes, you first put in ashes, this is the fourth page, sorry. Before you put the dishes in the water, you first put in ashes, so then you're no longer concerned with the water becoming fleishik or milk. Like, even if there is food stuff, there's actual residue in the water on the dishes, because the ashes in the water make it, no tintamis gum, they make it no longer edible. They have give it a bad taste. Right, ash water is not particularly good tasting. Right, I don't really want to eat, you know, the water that previously had, you know, ashes and now have some milk fleishik residue. Right, that's not really particularly appealing. So he doesn't mention that. It doesn't mention how much.
If you just took the tip of a match and put that in there, like you do with weddings, you just put the thing on that guy's head.
Yeah. So what's interesting about this is that you're pointing out something interesting, which is that the Shulchan Aruch doesn't actually mention how much. And it's actually true that, you know, we do know while ashes are not particularly appetizing, we do, as like a community, like we do sometimes eat food with ashes. Like if you think about Tishuvah to Maseket before Tishuvah, right? The minhag is, assuming it's not, you know, Erev Shabbat, it's not Shabbos, which I believe, well, this year is like a Thursday. Yeah, so this year would be an example of it. So this would be an example of it. The minhag is, for many people, is that, you know, you have your meal, whatever it is, you bench, and then later on you sit on the floor, you have an egg, and you take ashes of some sort, not a ton of ashes, a little bit of ashes, you put it on the egg, and you eat the egg. Or you have ashes with bread or something, whatever the, you know, the minhag is. And, you know, it doesn't taste amazing, but it's edible. You can eat ashes. They're not like, it doesn't ruin the food entirely. So,
toasted marshmallows, we enjoy it. Barbecue steak, we enjoy it. It can actually enhance.
Yeah, absolutely. So the shock, and many of the Achronim quote, I'm not going to read this fully inside, we want to look at the shock on page 4, he also mentioned, shock, like he quotes, din ze lo nimsa b'shum posek. Right, the Beit Yosef said, this is my opinion. And the shock says, great, nice opinion, but like no one else agrees with you. Like, this isn't true. Like, ashes are not considered to be significant enough as a nodim hamiskam. So just because you put ashes in the dishwasher, that wouldn't change anything. So then the question becomes, okay, well, soap, is soap similar to ashes? Well, it's certainly, you know, at least as good as ashes, but maybe soap is even better than ashes. Because while I wouldn't eat, you know, while I would maybe eat a little bread that has a little ashes on it, I really wouldn't eat bread that has soap on it.
Now,
right? Soap is
a dishwashing detergent. By mistake, because you got a little bit on your hand, and then you get rubbed your mouth or whatever. It's soft.
Yeah, it's not that it's not that it's inedible that you can't. We don't. The standard here is not like Roy Lachio tells you you can't eat it at all.
Yeah.
The standard here is it's just not a pleasant taste. Like you wouldn't eat it. That's kind of what we're talking about here.
I don't think it is
and I don't think anyone would eat like soap, like washing. You know, like the reason there's an expression of wash your mouth out with soap.
Right.
Like it doesn't taste good. No one thinks it's a particularly good taste. So there is a little bit of a debate. Can we say that though the shock and many of the Ashkenazi poskim say that when it comes to ashes, we don't rely on the Shulchan Aruch's kula, maybe though when it comes to soap, we can rely, actual soap, maybe then you can rely on the kula of the Shulchan Aruch. In which case then, if you go back to the dishwasher case, yes, it's true that nowadays our modern dishwashers do not have 60 times the amount of water, and most people when they put in their dishes usually have at least some residue, food residue left on the dishes. Maybe because, you know, most people, when they work your dishwasher, you don't just run it on empty. What do you do with the dishwasher? You put in detergent. That's what you do. You put in detergent. And therefore, once you put in detergent, maybe it therefore should be fine. That's the argument that some posts you make, which would make, you know, I think Ramosha hints to it, but certainly even nowadays, that would make the argument for Matir using dishwasher one after another. There are potentially two concerns, though, that Post can point out, even according to that, even with the soap. Number one, even with soap, if you've ever noticed a dishwasher, the way dishwashers work is that the water comes and collects the, you know, what happens to the food, right? The water comes and spritzes, very hot water, spritzes on the dishes. And it causes whatever food residue to kind of cool off and go down to the bottom of the dishwasher. And at the bottom of the dishwasher, what do you have? You have a filter. And now the filter has like a drain from the filter to the, you know, I guess, to the exhaust, to the whatever it's going out to the, you know, out to the sewer, yes. Dishwashers also have some space for food stuff because the same way that you don't want to clog your drain, so same thing's true about your dishwasher. Let's say someone, you know, like, ideally you don't put in, like, big pieces of meat, but, like, you know, let's say you put in, a chunk of meat in your dishwasher would break or would get clogged. So there are filters there automatically that keep food there. And now the problem is, let's say I put in, you know, I wash my dishes with, let's say I first wash my milk dishes in my dishwasher, and I had cheese. And the cheese are rather big chunks, right? I had some nice good Parmesan cheese, or, you know, that sticks to the plate, and now it's been washed, and it's stuck in the filter. And now I'm washing the water, after that first cycle, I now take out the milk dishes, I put in the fleshy dishes. And now, the fleshy dishes are being cleaned with what? With water, that the water comes in direct contact with actual cheese, in which case now I have actually traced up my fleshy dishes. So my fleshy dishes are being washed with water at the same time that it's also washing cheese. It's like the equivalent of cooking cheese in your fleshy dish, which would be tracing up your dishes. So there's a concern about the fact that you might have food residue left over in your filter. So that's what some people posting are concerned about, the fact that unless you're going to spend every time between dish, you know, washing your dishes, you're going to make sure the filter doesn't have food, which, you know, you can do, but it is slightly time-consuming if you have to take out the racks, if you have to take out the oscillating, whatever it is, like the spinning thing, whatever the word for that is. You take that out, and below there's a filter. You can take it out, but it usually just takes some time to do it. So unless you can do that between every cycle and make sure the filter is empty, you always have to be worried about the food stuff there. It's not so simple because...
Bring the detergent piece.
Oh, what about the detergent? So on the one hand, the detergent thing should be fine because once you have detergent, it kind of nullifies everything. But it's not so simple because when it comes to soap and detergent, we believe, you know, might be fine when it comes to, like, bleo, like absorption taste. But when it comes to, like, big chunks of the food, it doesn't necessarily change anything. In that, we're concerned that, yes, it's true, the outside. Let's say I have, like, a big piece of meat, and I, you know, soak it in soap. So, like, yeah, I'm not going to want to eat the piece of meat, like, the outside exterior. But what might I do? I could cut off, you know, the sides and eat the middle. In the middle of this, a middle of it might still be good. And, you know, if I'm a yeshiva bacher and I'm hungry, I might really do that. You know, so depending on the circumstance, that's why we're not, it doesn't necessarily, depending on the size of the food leftover, the soap might not help. It's a very big debate. That part.
You can't run it 100 times either because the cheese will be sitting right there.
Yeah, that's the concern. Now, it is worth pointing out that most modern dishwashers, right, you might ask yourself this question. Wait, at the end of the day, though, I have never, my entire life, other than when I tried to kosher my dishwasher the first time, we'll talk about that maybe a different time, I had to kosher dishwashers, but other than that first time if you're koshering a dishwasher, mm-hmm. I have never in my life ever emptied out the filter. Now, forget the fact that I was switching from milk to plastic. I don't switch out. Our dishwasher is plastic, but I have washed this dishwasher now for a full year, and not every time has it been pretty clean. Like, sometimes the dishes are pretty dirty, and I have never cleaned out the filter. Now, you might ask yourself, okay, well, where's all that food going? Because no one ever cleans out the filter. So how do dishwashers work? Well, nowadays, most dishwashers, what they have is a grinder at the bottom of the filter that grinds up the food into small little pieces so that it can then be, you know, go out to the sewer, right? Which makes a lot of sense, because otherwise you have to clean out the filter.
I'm loving this dishwasher 101. It's so fun.
I've never heard of it.
So in terms of, so therefore, if that's true, that, and that's true for most modern dishwashers, so then you don't really have to be concerned about the food stuff the same way, because even if there's food stuff, it's very small, and there's a soap, and most of the food stuff won't really be left over, and that's why, you know, you don't have to ever empty out your filter. However, at the same time, all of these, you know, these are all the reasons we make go. However, a reason that you might be machmir after all this is that, yes, it's true, you use soap. But how do dishwashers work? We're really going through 101 dishwashers. Well, it's kind of similar a little bit to the way that your washing machine works. What's the first cycle that goes through? Right, dishwashers, like washing machines, usually go through cycles. The first cycle is usually, for most modern dishwashers, is just water. No soap. Only the second cycle has soap, and then maybe the third cycle has soap, the fourth cycle has soap. But if you don't have water in the, you don't have any detergent in the first cycle, and all you have is water, then you might have already ruined the dishes in after that first cycle. And so, because of that, you might have a real reason to be concerned about the fact that you can't really use milchik after fleishik or fleishik after milchik in the same dishwasher. Now, that's kind of a very quick, you know, summary of, like, the main concerns of dishwashers. As I said, Rav Moshe thinks that dishwashers are, in theory, mutter. Rav Moshe thinks because either you have 60 times the amount of water, which is no longer true nowadays, but in Rav Moshe's time that was true, or because there is no food stuff left over. I don't know why it's such a fair assumption, but it is true. Some people don't have food stuff. I think most posts nowadays think, even if you're the type of person who, you know, always scrapes off your dish very carefully, or always, you know, some people like always rinse off their dish before they put it in the dishwasher. Even if you're that type of person, most of us would say we can't really be makeup because, like, I don't know, maybe one time you forgot.
And
maybe
even
someone.
So as dishwashers get better, people are more incentivized
to
have more stuff on there.
Yeah, some people get, you know,
bosh, when the instructions are don't scrape it too well, because there's this computer thing or whatever, and it goes until it sees that it's clean.
Yeah, actually,
so
most modern...
it's clean, it stops right away.
Yeah.
Right.
If you actually look at most, like, dishwashing, like, websites, they'll actually recommend to not pre-wash dishes because it works better when they're actually a bit dirty.
I've also seen people that yeshiva dishwashers or institutional dishwashers are somehow different. They're hotter, superheated, whatever.
Yeah, those people are bigger also, yeah. It'd be different issues.
When we have pot, but rice, it doesn't, there's, very often there's a film. You know, if you have a bowl of rice and you dole it out, and sometimes on soup, there's always a, very often there's a film left in the bottom of the soup bowl or the other.
Like the oily film, you mean?
No, it's
like
not
oily.
Like
you can see like where it was up to in the pot, because it leaves.
No,
like,
well, the bowl.
Are you in the bowl?
You know, it doesn't. Yeah. You know, with you know whether it's the dishwasher being old or.
You're saying in the dishwasher, you can see where it was left.
No, when you take the dishes
bowl,
out.
In the bowl of soup, you can see where the soups came up to because there's a residue where. Let's say you have tomatoes.
Yeah.
Well, to me, it's more with the pasta, and it, you know, it's never pasta, it's something like rice.
Yeah, because, like, the oil doesn't fully come out.
Yeah,
it's the oils, yeah. But that's not, like, that would be called, that would be the bleo. That would be, like, absorption.
So bottom line is what you seem to be saying, though, you should not use the same dishwasher.
So the summary is, for most you think it's fine, since you have to change the racks. As I said, the changing the racks itself is like a really big finish, because once you think everything else was fine, the racks, most is concerned there might be actual food stuff left over from one cycle to another on the racks. Now, I personally just have never, I mean, like I'm not trying to hear disagree with Moshe, I just personally have never seen food left over on my racks. I've seen food left over on my plates, but never on my racks. So that just seems, we're going to be done in 5 minutes. So I've never seen food left over on the racks themselves. So it's interesting that Moshe is mechmer about the racks, but Moshe thinks as long as you switch out the racks, you can reuse the dishwasher. Most game, the minhag, especially in America, is really not to reuse dishwashers. Now, there are some postgame who are mako, based on all of these reasons, and there are, you know, I'm not here to poskin or cast aspersions on those tops, like they do exist. Based on the arguments we made, based on Moshe's argument, you could, in theory, construct a pretty good argument that you should be mako. What I've suggested until now is that you still, nowadays, have a reason to be machmer because of the new ways that dishwashers work might no longer apply because the soap is different and the amount of water used is different, and therefore you might still be concerned, even nowadays.
But it seems, based on your argument, if you do run a cycle in between, the soap does run just on everything that's there, and the grinder will have taken care of the cheese, and you're good to go.
If you clean the water.
If you run the cycle once empty, you run the dishwasher once empty.
No, because the concern is that, I think even that would be problematic, because you're still concerned about the...
filter.
Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm not concerned about that.
There's an American sock. You want everybody to put it in your house. In Israel, all that's the Israeli sock or something. In America, do it so that everybody will eat it. You don't want to find out how do you do your dishwasher before I accept an invitation.
Yeah, so that's certainly the question of standardization of kitchens.
Yeah.
Even in the case of if you ran an empty cycle, the concern is that you might, the walls of the dishwasher, right, have like, or flachic or something, and there's no soap. Right, let's say there's actual residue that's somehow left over from
the
cycle.
Wait, so why does that apply? Oh, because we just have less water?
There's less water, and the run might have soap.
Okay.
Yeah, but it is an interesting question. It's not so obvious. You're right, you might be right that maybe that would be what we'd make, though. It's like, there are a lot of like side debates here.
Know that your dishwasher is only meat, so.
This is like the minhag in America is indeed to only use, you know, in minhag in Israel, even nowadays, is primarily to use it for one gender because for most people, the truth is like the wealth of most people nowadays who don't live in apartments is that they usually have two dishwashers. That's just the reality of, in Israel especially, and even in America, you live in houses, most people have two dishwashers. And so that's just the way the minhag develops. Is there reason to be mako? Yeah, there probably is room to be mako, but that's just the way the minhag develops. You know, if you want to ask your local Orthodox rabbi, you're welcome to, or posek, or female post, like, you're more than welcome to ask them what they want, how they want to pass on this chayva, but it's certainly a debate. I will point out, just the aside, that the last source, I'm not going to read it inside, we're in here, but Yabia Omer, who's the Ravadi Yosef, he is Mako on this chayva. He thinks you could reuse the same dishwasher without changing the racks, first leishek and then milchek. So...
And not rinsing it through.
Not rinsing it through. You can use it once, leishek, and then milchek. Now, you can argue that the time of Moshe, Avadia's tshuva is no longer the same way that dishwashers work nowadays. You can make that argument. But certainly you do have a position of a pretty significant halachic figure who is matir entirely. So there is, you know, room to be mako. It's not...
So we see that his whole tshuva would have every source in the whole world on the topic.
So yeah. And I certainly can rely on Avadia, but, it, you know, if you don't rely on Avadia, usually you're Ashkenazi, so then I wouldn't necessarily recommend you to Rav. But just to give you, like, the full breadth of the topic, this is kind of Avadia's position. But as I said, kind of to end, to summarize, like, the very last thing I'll say, it's really interesting that Rav Moshe here is so makel on dishwashers, right? And, and what's interesting about it is the American stock never became the follower of Moshe. Right, even in the 60s, 70s, where it wasn't common to have two dishwashers, and they say the water, the way it happened to work, like very few people I know of ever at that time still used one dishwasher. Even if they changed the racks, no one passed them like Rav Moshe.
I never knew anybody who used one dishwasher.
And part of that has to do with the fact that when it comes to kashrut, we typically are more machmir than maybe we always have to be. So it's just an interesting side point about just the American community or the community in general, which comes back to David's point that there is typically this certain standardization and you want people to be able to eat in your kitchens, so we typically have a more stringent, you know, position just because otherwise, you know, we're concerned people want to eat in our kitchen, so we just typically take the more machmir approach.
So.
That was great.